Hello and welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, on Smart Speaker, and of course on our podcast. I'm AD Packham and we've all been listening to the Mac Lads in association with Flowers Unlimited. Well then, we got a dose of cup fever this weekend as we went to Old Trafford and sent Manchester United tumbling out of the FA Cup. Not that you would know about that if you'd listened to any of the mainstream media, who, as usual, were more obsessed with United losing rather than who beat them. Rest assured, that will not be happening here. However, delighted we were with our progress to the fourth round, though, the celebrations became muted as we learned of our opponents in the next round. So there will be no nice and easy trip to non-league Macclesfield for us. Joining me today is, of course, Alan Wares, and we are delighted to welcome back the one and only Vicky Rees. Hello, Vicky. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you. Hello.
It sounds like you had a lovely weekend because you have been giggling constantly.
I did have a terrific weekend. Who didn't, let's be honest, in a footballing sense?
I think some people from South London didn't, which is quite funny.
You know what? I think they actually did. Which is like quite good. I think they've actually, they've taken it on the chin and they've been very good natured about it.
Well, too bad if they haven't, frankly, because, you know, they lost fair and square. But, I mean, it's all the various records that tumbled with it that made it so agreeable. But let's not stat it. Vicky, just give us a flavour of how far across the ceiling you were crawling on Saturday afternoon.
Oh, it was terrific. I mean, I was out for about the first 20 minutes and then I got home and I thought, oh, I wonder what time that Palace Macclesfield game is. And I had no intention of watching it, really, because it was such a foregone conclusion, wasn't it? Let's face it, we all looked at the fixtures, we all looked at the draw and we went, that's just absolutely typical. We get a tricky away tie against another Premier League team. They, as usual, get, you know, the equivalent of a local brownie pack to play against. As far as, you know, the lowest ranked team in the draw, typical Palace, you know, the gods have favoured them yet again. So I got in and I flicked the TV on and, oh, it was about 20, 25 minutes and it was 0-0. And I thought, oh, this is better than I was expecting. So I watched it for a bit and then I realised that actually Macclesfield were winning every challenge and you know, it was all looking quite good. But there was at no point in the match when I could bring myself to believe that it would actually happen, you know, with especially when you do get Premier League teams against lower ranked sides, they do have a nasty habit of scraping late equalisers in a kind of Spurs Tamworth type of style. So, you know, my expectations were still low, but it just got better and better as it went on, didn't it? What a game.
Well, but you know, you've got to give credit to Macclesfield, and you know, it was, you know, what we have to remember is the fact that, you know, they are a Phoenix club. I mean, obviously, we all remember going to Moss Rose with the Albion back in the day and back in when they were Macclesfield Town and managed by Samuel McElroy or Paul Ince or whoever. And it was like, you know, they were a fair to middling club at the time. But, you know, they did fall on hard times. And it's just great to see them back. And beating Palace.
I wouldn't even go so far. Well, I would go further than saying I give them credit. I would actually stick them on a pedestal and gold medals. I mean, and if ever there was any Macclesfield fans that you ran into down here, then you buy them a pint just for the sake of buying a pint. I mean, this is not giving credit. They absolutely battered Palace. Palace were nothing like good enough.
Yeah, it was an astonishing result. Just because, well, in so many ways, but generally speaking, when you have, let's not forget, they are also a part-time club. You know, that those players are not full-time. Most of them have other jobs. And for them to sustain the effort that they did for whatever it was, 96 minutes against a Premier League side, no matter how out of form they are, that's where it normally trips up the smaller clubs, isn't it? Because the players inevitably aren't as fit. They can't sustain that level of quality for as long. And even, you know, the odd refereeing decisions have a habit of going the way of the bigger clubs. So for it to pan out like it did, and you know, even when Palace got that late goal back, and you thought, oh, here we go, this is where they do what Spurs did to Tamworth and claw it back, and I was preparing at that point to, you know, for Palace to go on and win the game, but still to at least have some opportunity of knocking their performance and laughing at how difficult they made it look. But you know, for Macclesfield to hang on the way they did was just absolutely superb. And
Yeah.
it's not just that game, is it? It's just the impact it's had on that hold they've had over us since, you know, the last 8 months. And I think we can probably all agree that the FA Cup had been in decline for many, many years. It had lost its magic. It had lost its luster and shine. And, you know, from about May last year, it no longer felt like the same competition. It was rubbish. And yet in one weekend, it's suddenly reclaimed its magic. It's amazing, you know, and everything they've achieved, and it is, you know, they won the cup fair and square. Well, not fair and square, dodgy
No,
referee.
it wasn't.
It was not fair and square. Okay, but they somehow
Mossied.
skulked their way to winning that competition. And now they've just, in one game, they've just utterly embarrassed themselves, and they cannot. And the thing is, in years to come, people will forget they won the FA Cup in the same way that no one, or most people can't sort of pluck out the air. When did Wigan win the cup? When did, you know, when
When did
did
Millwall
Spurs
get to the
win the League
final?
Cup?
Yeah.
When did, Portsmouth win the FA Cup?
But the...
But I will always remember this, and everyone will always remember the time that Macclesfield beat Crystal Palace, and that is
Yeah.
absolutely hilarious, and it's ruined everything for them, and I could not be happier.
Well, the last non-league side to beat out to knock out the holders was actually Crystal Palace when they were a non-league side.
Well, even that, they can't even cling on to that, because at that point, Crystal Palace were a Southern League team, and that which is
It
effectively
was 117
almost
years
the same
ago.
level. It's almost the same level as the Football League at that point. It was just that the Northern and Midland sort of cadre of clubs that had formed the Football League weren't letting in Southern League clubs at the time, but they were broadly at the same level when they then let them into the Football League. But this is a team, let's make no bones about it, six divisions below, who are part-time, whose entire squad probably earns less in a year than some of Palace's players do in a week. It's tremendous and hilarious, and
It
it's
is. And isn't it appropriate? Actually, I didn't actually think of it in those terms. I knew the stat about 1909, but if you're saying 117 years, that's an appropriate number because it's also the number of places
it's
between Palace
below,
and
yes.
Macclesfield, you know.
Well,
And also, I'm just thinking, well, okay, let's see if we can put this into context because we know that Macclesfield have been in the league, or albeit their predecessors have been in the league. I'm just trying to think, well, let's say Worthing. But then Worthing have been near the top of their regional equivalent for the last 2 or 3 years. So you can't even say that because at the moment Macclesfield are in 14th, albeit they've got games in hand, but they're in 14th place in the National League North. So it's
yes.
not as though they're having even a particularly great season in the league.
Oh no, they're really struggling, but
I
and
mean
their
they are,
manager is actually
they do have games in hand,
yeah, a
and
good in the
those
cup
would
run,
take
yeah.
them up to near the playoffs, but they're not, you know, so we're even at a sort of a level. I suppose it's the equivalent of, if you're going to have the southern equivalent, I'd say it's something like, well, it is a good one, Salisbury, who admittedly beat Worthing over the weekend 5-4, sounded like a
But I think,
cracking
Alan,
game.
I think you can include those clubs as well. You know, I don't want, much as 117 is a nice number, what you've also got to take into account, yes, it's technically 117 places, but given that you've got the National League North and South and they're on the same level, if Macclesfield are 14th in National League North, then you also have to count the 13 clubs who are ahead of Macclesfield in the
That's what I
National
mean,
League
yeah.
South. So technically, it's more like 130 clubs
You
behind.
just keep going, Vix. Keep going.
Yeah,
Keep
that's
going.
someone else pointed that out. That wasn't my stat, but I think it's a very good stat. And it's a clubs, you know, 130 clubs above
Okay.
Macclesfield until you get to Crystal Palace.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, our congratulations, of course, go to
Hang on a sec,
Macclesfield,
AD.
who.
Can I just say, Vicky, could you be careful of removing the splinters from your backside as you get off the fence?
Yeah. I'm also very much aware of Schadenfreude, so I'm like, we've got
Well,
to
yeah,
play
listen,
them very
hey,
soon.
this has every notion of biting us in the backside, but I think we've already been bitten in the backside by Palace doing what they did at the end of last season by winning the
Maybe.
cup. So this
Well, you
is kind
know,
of maybe.
they can't take this away. They can't just erase this by winning it this season because, oh, they're out of the competition. But if I might have sort of skulked on a couple of Palace message boards this week just to see what the take was, and they are utterly miserable. They're not even they're sitting on there going, "We can't sing that song now. We can't sing the song about winning the cup. We can't sing this, that. We can't even laugh at Brighton because this is so humiliating." So do you know what? You've just got to grab it, haven't you? You've just got to grab it while you
They are
can.
still in the in Europe though, so let's
They'll win that. We all know they'll win that competition, and then they'll be in the UEFA Cup next year. But
Yeah, but they're not playing hairdressers anymore. No, was it hairdressers or fishmongers
Santa's
or
a beauty product, I believe it was.
product, yeah.
But okay, well let's move on from there because I don't want to talk about that lot up the road, to be honest. But now let's talk about something a little bit closer to home, and that was of course our trip to Manchester at the weekend. And there were six changes with Steele, Boscagli, Coppola, Veltman, Gruder, and Welbeck all coming back into the side. It's still a relatively strong side, but the person I really want to talk about there, Vicky, is Jason Steele, because A, he had a brilliant game again, and it was man of the match when we won 6-0 somehow. But he is like really shone this season when he's been called on.
I mean, he's not played many games, has he? And I suppose the games he's played have been what, cup games, so some of which were against Oxford and Barnsley, both of which we won 6-0. So I probably wouldn't say he shone in either of those. Oh, no, she no, I do
He
know what,
did. He did. The one at Oxford, he was
he
man of the match.
might as well just shut up. No, he did. He made some very good saves. I thought he was excellent against United. Most of what he did, you probably would expect your goalkeeper to make. I think what I did like was the distribution, because it felt like he was actually kind of making things happen a bit more than we have done recently. I think Bart's had a much better season in terms of goalkeeping. I think that's been a notable improvement in terms of his saves. I still think the distribution isn't as good as it's talked up
I mean,
sometimes.
that was actually going to be my point, because it was like the dish be I mean let's be fair to Bart has been absolutely brilliant this season, but his distribution, everything does tend to slow down a bit with Jason. It's a lot, everything seems to happen a lot quicker, and it's a lot more direct, and it's I think this is why when De Zerbi was here, he was alternating between the two, because obviously Jason's distribution was so much better.
I cannot get my head around that. Even at the time, and certainly with hindsight, I cannot get my head around that alternating thing. If you've got two goalkeepers, very similar attributes and very similar techniques, then you still land on one, because if nothing else, you're not helping out your defenders around you by the virtue of the fact that they're playing with a different person who, if what you're saying is to be believed, one will work out the ball a lot quicker, and it could be that one distributes a lot better, and it could be that one saves a lot better, and things like that. I think it's absolutely imperative. I think any fan and any player will tell you about the notion of consistency, and actually, as best you can, playing the team that played before, because you start getting used to all those little nuances. I can't help thinking that with Bart, the whole bit about him taking a long time, I get the feeling he's been told to do that. And the other thing about it is, and I think because Bart obviously played in the game up at Old Trafford earlier this season, and one of the goals that Man U scored was partially put down to him on account of the fact that he played the ball, one of those sort of 40-yard balls up to the halfway line on the deck. And I think it was Gruder who clearly, it was either Gruder or Rutter, one of the two, clearly wasn't ready for it, and someone over his shoulder pinched his pocket, and Bart got the blame for it. But it was along the lines of, okay, who's ready to receive it? And they should be like that. I think it happened to Arsenal as well. Who's ready to receive it? And those players have got to be on the case. Now, like I say, it could be any one given pass where, okay, Steele, his passes came off. Verbruggen's, where they should have come off, didn't. So to criticise one over the other, I think is a little unfair. Whatever way you cut it, clearly Hertzler prefers Verbruggen. But having said that, Steele has so much to contribute, and I still am pleased that he can contribute what he does. And it's unfair, but I still harken back to his really poor days at Sunderland and how much they're absolutely baffled by his rise on account of the fact that when he was there, he wasn't a great goalkeeper and he never had a good time and he was dismissed and he was pilloried and
I
everything
think
like that.
he was a decent enough goalkeeper. I mean, he was playing
He
for
didn't have a
England
good time there.
under-21s, but I
He
mean,
didn't.
basically, he just had a massive,
Oh,
he just basically had a massive confidence issue,
well,
and everything with everything that could go wrong went wrong.
I think therein lies the point that I'm making. He didn't have a good time and he was pilloried for it. And let's face it, a lot of football fans are not the most sympathetic people at the best of times.
Don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. So, listen, I think if. And the other thing I was going to say is that just about Jason Steele is how much he's not throwing his toys out of his pram. If one goalkeeper gets the nod, I mean, the goalkeepers do work well together and that, and obviously they want to play. But what we get certainly backstage and what we hear from him is nothing but utter professionalism. You don't hear
Yeah,
him.
he's a
I
good
mean,
cheerleader.
he's a good cheerleader. He's supporting the team. He is one of the dad's army. Of those like Dunk, like now Gross, like Milner, like Welbeck, that spine of the team where there's so much experience, and he is happy to offer that to his teammates and his fellow goalkeepers. And I
Yeah.
love that about, well, I love that about anyone, but I love that about him.
Yeah, he's great. And he did make some great saves in this game, particularly earlier on when Dalot raced through, didn't he? And he had to be on hand to stop there. And he had there's a save from Bruno Fernandes as well,
I
which
think
was a
that
great bit.
there's saves you hope your decent keeper would make. You know, he was
Yes.
quick off his line to Dalot. The saves low down again. They are. It was decent save, but I would have been disappointed if he'd let it in. Put it that way. And likewise, the Dalot chance. I think if he hadn't come off his line there, you'd have criticised him for being slow. So you know, I think he did have a good game. Don't get me wrong. I thought he was great. Would I drop Bart? Probably not. I just, yeah, there are times when I would potentially like Bart to be a little bit less passive with it. And, but, you know, sometimes that's the opponents, isn't it? Sometimes
Yeah.
that's who you're playing against and who you've got in
Kasper Ankergren did
your
it so much
midfield
better.
at the time. And who you've got in your own midfield because, when we were a bit zippier passing it out 2 or 3 years ago, and then you look back at that and think, well, that's because you had Caicedo and McAllister in there and you could give those two players who are world class balls. Was under pressure and they would turn on the sixpence and break that press and they'd go. Whereas with respect to what we've got now, and I've said this elsewhere, we don't have that level, unfortunately. So that ball, that's probably why it looks a lot slower at times because we haven't got that person that can just flick a switch and get us out of that tight situation.
And I
Yeah.
know I'm actually tempting fate here, but also we haven't had his dropsies, you know, bad dropsies. I'm thinking the one at Fulham last season, that kind of thing.
Okay, so as I mentioned earlier on, there was six changes to the team, but one player who did keep his place in the team, Vicky, was Pascal Gross, and he's 3 games in, still unbeaten.
Yeah, I think he just brings that nous to the team, doesn't he? We didn't need to worry about lack of pace, as we've all kind of joked that he never had it in the first place, so that wasn't an issue.
Tell Everton
Well, yeah,
that.
I think he's got that kind of footballing brain, hasn't he, that you can't teach, and it feels like he's added a bit of calmness, you know. And certainly when you play Man United, it's always good to have him anyway, isn't it? Because he kind of haunts them. But I'm sure his mere presence was probably worth a goal there. In fact, yeah, oh no, it was at Man City actually should have scored, wasn't it? But
Yeah.
he's just a very calming presence, isn't it? And you can, even in the sort of brief times he's had since he's come back, you can already see that his ability to just kind of stop, think. Or not even stop, but he thinks and he knows where that correct pass is. He knows where the best pass is to play at that any given time.
Yeah, I mean, one of the other things I picked up on, which I obviously it must have been there before, but I hadn't really picked up on it, is positional sense. He's closing down the passing lanes, and it just knows where to be on the pitch.
That's exactly what he was when he was doing that earlier. And to be fair, actually, McAllister and Caicedo, when you consider that particular midfield trio, I mean, it's absolutely salivating. And all three of them knew what their job was, how to do it. They didn't always get it right, but you know, they knew that's why they've, you know, they got their big moves, one to Dortmund, one to Liverpool, one to Chelsea. I'd take them all three back. Even yeah, I would take all three back in a heartbeat. Put them back into the bosom of the family and say, look, don't be so silly in future and just know where your home is. But that is the nature of what Gross does. He makes it look easy. You know, I mean, I think it was that Bill Shankly quote, isn't it? The first 2 yards are in your head. Yeah, for me, it's something he's always done. But then, like I say, the best midfielders, like Zidane, I'm not necessarily quite comparing him to Zidane, but even if he had three players around him, he always looked as though he was in 10 yards of space. That the best ones know how to do that.
Absolutely. Okay, another player that has been shining quite a lot of late, Vicky, is our friend Ferdy Kalliolu, and he will another marauding run from him was responsible for setting up our first goal.
Yeah, well, that was a move involving quite a lot of the players, wasn't it? I think I saw
Yeah,
him and
but
it
it was
started out on
he's
steel,
he.
but yeah, I think he's really now starting to look like the investment we made in him, because let's be honest, he was an expensive player by our standards. He came in as a almost a marquee signing, if you like, because he'd had that really good performance in
Euros.
Turkey in the Euros. And I think he obviously had that terrible injury which really set him back. But I think you're now starting to see the best of him. I think his attacking and his sort of passing is probably a step up from his defending, but it's been exciting in the last few games, actually, having Mitoma back and starting to see the kind of what that can be with Kimo
Yes.
and Mitoma, or even when Dekuyper played as well. I think there were nice sort of partnerships showing, and I think that's when you really start to see things coming off, isn't it? Because it's all very well having one player having a good run of form, as an individual, but you need to start forming those partnerships and having those players working.
Yeah.
That's when it feels like things are starting to click. And I think with Mitoma, we know tracks back and works hard anyway. So, to have that and potentially that's a little bit of defensive cover for Ferdy, or whoever's playing at left
Yeah.
back. But
I mean, Al, this is exactly what we were saying last week, wasn't it? About building up those partnerships on the pitch, it's been disappointing actually because the origin story of Mitoma and Kalliolu that started to gel in that game against Burnley. They've not actually played together on the same side since.
well, I think that whilst partnerships I think are important, I think that can be overstressed. And if nothing else, when you've got a situation, any given situation on the pitch where a player's got the ball, this is something when I was, sort of 8 years old and told who's the most important person on the pitch? Well, it's the person with the ball. Who's the second most important? The one they're about to pass to.
You mean it's not the referee?
Never is, never has been. And let's face it, it's not a case. If you're talking partnerships being that important, then that kind of implies that Kadioglu only ever passes to Mitoma. And of course, they'll always need, and they're always set up that there's at least two or three or four options for a pass. So if you're talking about that, you've got a sort of a midfield. Whoever's in this instance on the left, roughly on the left side of midfield. Now it could be Mitoma, but he's more advanced, or you could have Ayari popping over there, or Gomez is fairly. So it's not necessarily about that sort of singular strand of the partnership between the two. So if you're not going to, if Hertzler hasn't picked Kadioglu and Mitoma together, then usually knowing him and De Zerbi before him, it's because they were then trying to pick a team to beat that particular opponent rather than playing what you would consider your best side.
Yeah,
And there
I
are
know.
some
It's just.
defenses. I mean, like for instance, would you? I mean, we would have been screaming out, for instance, for a quote big number nine against the likes of Burnley, but against Manchester United, it might not be quite such an important thing. Is those kind of things you've got to see what the strengths of the opposition are. Yes, you pick the team that's your best team and you worry about your stuff, but sometimes in this instance, I couldn't give you a for instance as to why or how, but the fact of Kadioglu and Mitoma not playing together again since doesn't actually really count for anything. I know that I just said earlier that it's important you have consistency of team now, now and again, now and again, now and again, that kind of thing. But It's also how you set up as well. You could have the same staff, you could have the same personnel, but then set up differently. I mean, there's times where we're playing five at the back with two wing backs, we're playing 4-4-2, whatever it might be. So that kind of partnership thing, I think it's important, but I think for me, can it be a little bit overstressed?
I don't know. I mean, basically, I mean, at the end of the day, it's entertainment, isn't it? You know, we knew that when Purvis and Mitoma were in tandem, then we'd have that side sewn up quite
When it
often,
was that
and it was
particular.
fun to watch. And it's, you know, just watching Ferdy and Carew together, it was fun to watch. And you know, I'm not saying that the football's been necessarily turgid of late, but it's just nice to have a little bit of excitement.
You're right, but in that sense, what you're actually talking about is that kind of notion of hugging the left touch line in order to get the ball over. But then obviously there's far more to a given game. Like, for instance, let me give you a for instance as to us defending. We go back to what we were mentioning last week. Doku for Manchester City, no mug, and yet we did a really good job on doubling up on him, to the point that it virtually extinguished a hell of a lot of what he was doing. Not everything, but a hell of a lot of what he was doing. And so if you had, for instance, Mitoma and he was doubled up on or even trebled up on, then that kind of negates anything that Ferdy and Mitoma could do together. So you have to reconsider what it is you're going to do. I take your point. Yes, it can be fun and they do know how to operate very well together, but sometimes it's just not going to work.
Okay. Well, one player that has been getting quite a lot of stick, Ricky, is Brian Gruder, but he did open the scoring in this game.
Yeah, and he looked a bit surprised, didn't he?
He always looks a
What?
bit surprised.
What have I just done?
When he ran off, I thought he sort of turned around, and I wasn't sure if he was beckoning other players or if he was looking for an offside flag or he was waiting for VAR that wasn't going to come. I don't know. He just looked a bit puzzled. And look, we again. I've said this elsewhere, but someone described him recently as having all the skills and no brains, and you can sort of see why they would say that, because he has had some games where his decision making has been, it felt like the secretary had blown up somewhere along the line. There is talk that he's a better in a kind of number 10 role. Potentially, that's it. But yeah, I think he. He still does far too much. How can I put it? Fannying. Let's just call it
Well, you'll
fannying.
say faffing about, yeah.
Well, no, well that. But I mean, in the sense of oh, do you know what? I'm just going to say it. Diving.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be like
He has
a
issues with
commentator.
gravity, is what you're saying.
No, but I could, you know, I could stand there and be like the commentators and go, "Oh, simulation," but. You know, even in that United game, there was one, wasn't there, where up at the end, where the away fans were, where he threw himself to the ground and then they ran away with the ball. And I
It's
think it
basically
was,
cheating, Vicky, isn't it?
but it is annoying when they do it, and especially when they don't get the decision and the ball goes away. And you know, it is frustrating, and he can be too lightweight at times. But hopefully, that you know, the team seems to have got a bit more confidence together lately. It has been mooted by other people that having someone like Gross around, you know, especially I guess as another German speaker as well. Potentially, that's not, I mean, it's not like we're short of German speakers at the Albion, is it these days? To be fair, so maybe that's probably a bit
Yeah.
overstated. But you know, someone with Gross's wisdom and ability and experience, that's potentially going to help him a bit as well. And it's confidence, isn't it? Even last season, we saw him really start to shine far more towards in the second half of the season, and then almost the summer came at the wrong time for Gruder, I think, because he finished quite well, and he struggled a bit from the start of this season. So, but I thought, you know, he had a good game. There's still plenty to improve on for me. Still a bit lightweight at times, and really needs to cut out the diving.
Yeah, I mean, this is where I know we'll talk about it a bit more soon, but this is where Mike Antony comes in, the fellow that we've actually acquired as a, I don't know what is it, a sort of psychological shrink nutter, headbanger. Well, he's come from rugby, and I actually got a message from a good friend of ours, Ruben, an Albion fan from New Zealand, who doesn't know him but is familiar with his work because he's worked in New Zealand rugby. And he said when he saw the news come up, he nearly fell off his chair. He said it's such a good acquisition. And the first thing he said was, hopefully he's going to be the first fella to stop Brian Gruder swan laking. And yeah, can you imagine a New Zealand rugby coach having a word with Brian Grude about not
Yeah.
doing that. If I was Grude, yes, sir. Yes, sir. No, I won't do that anymore, sir. No. No.
It was yes. We'll touch on that shortly.
Yeah.
But okay, I'm one player in this game, Vicky, who loves playing at Old Trafford, particularly since he left there, is Danny Welbeck. And woof, what a goal!
Yeah, well, I think we have a couple of players that love playing at Old Trafford, don't we? In fact, most of them do, given our record in recent years. They probably all love playing at Old Trafford. But yeah, it was lovely, wasn't it? I mean, did he miss a chance earlier on? Am I mixing up my Manchester clubs here? I might
Yeah,
be.
he did miss one. Basically, there
Didn't.
was there we had a
Oh,
really
the
good high press,
bad
and
goalkeeping.
Lammens
Yeah,
completely
of
messed
course.
up,
Yes.
and Danny really should have finished. But
Yeah, I think if that had fallen to Haaland, it probably would have ended up in the back of the net, wouldn't it? But it was the move itself. I mean, I watched it as it unfolded, and I remember thinking, oh, the United defence has really. If you'd had Alan Hansen on Match of the Day, he'd have been absolutely ripping apart the defence because they just stood there and watched Gruder bring the ball round down with his back to goal, turn towards the goal, pass it. No one got anywhere near him. It's all on
yeah, he
well.
was lonely.
Brilliant, but the United's defending was horrific, wasn't it? If that was your defence, you would be fuming that they just stood there and watched. But you've got to make the finish, and
Yeah.
it never felt like he was going to miss that, did he? When he got that ball and turned, as soon as he hit it, I thought, "Oh, this is
Yeah.
going." I was very confident that would go in, and he has been. I think his start to the season was the best run of his career, wasn't it,
Yes, it
Welbeck?
was, yeah.
And then he had a little bit of a back twinge, which he's entitled to at his age, aren't we all? Obviously, I'm not Danny
Yeah, but
Welbeck's
you were once, so we all were once.
and then but hopefully that can be the start of another little run for him
Yeah.
because I think
Yeah.
he's got to get past 12, hasn't he, to have the best goal scoring year of his career.
All
So that'd be
right.
nice.
And he doesn't normally score pingers with his left peg
I
either.
was going to say, I mean, I had to check. I did Google it. Is he left? Could it to finish like that on your weaker foot? And it's like,
It wasn't even a swinger. It was,
no,
no, I
I
mean,
just.
he meant to do it. And you know me, AD. Well, so, sorry about that. You know me, AD. You know how much it drives me around the twist when I see these sort of professional footballers who are playing and training every day who cannot and will not use their quote weaker foot. For
Yeah.
me, all right, you grow up with a bias of playing football with favouring a given foot, but if you're looking for fine margins to improve. Even Minte's learned it. He's learned to get down to the byline and cross with his right foot and has been effective a few times. But then there's other times where I think it might have even been last season or season before when we beat Southampton 4-0 and it could have been 10.
Should have been 10.
Yeah. And was it Minte that, he,
Devon Lott, yes.
because he wouldn't score with his quote weaker foot, he ended up fluffing his chance. And sometimes, if we're due to get 10, then score 10. Don't muck about.
Well, Man City did in the FA Cup, didn't they? So it was, yes. Okay, well, I mean, United were always going to come back into it, and they did pull one back, Vicky, and it was another goal conceded from a corner.
Yeah, I didn't feel like we were going to come away with a clean sheet. I must admit, United at Old Trafford, you always feel like something is going to go in their favour, even if it's a sort of questionable penalty or, something connected with Bruno Fernandes' dive or something. But in fact, when they brought Maguire on, I remember saying in one of the WhatsApp groups, I
You
said,
say he
"This is
comes slabhead.
corner and." Maguire scores, and
Oh,
actually,
man.
Maguire was only about a foot away from being on the end of it, wasn't it? So that was obviously the United tactic. I think they did it in the UEFA Cup last season, didn't they? Maguire came on very late in those, score from corners. So
Yeah.
work out quite how I thought it would, but yeah, look, it was that kind of like desperation by them, wasn't it? Fortunately, the good guys held out in the end, even if
Yeah.
the mean, nasty referee quite correctly sent off one of their players.
I was going to say that. I mean, Shay Lacy, I mean, to be fair to me, he does look very, very promising from what I've seen him,
So
which is good
what?
news for United, I suppose. But his face when he got that red
I
card,
played for Manchester
oh,
United. The rules don't apply to
he was
me.
absolute. Oh, it was.
I think the thing that was the most grating was listening to two former professional footballers whinging on Match of the Day afterwards that I mean, it by the letter of the law, by the letter of the law, yes. But it was harsh, and he's only young. And I thought, okay, let's play devil's advocate here then. So say they the ref say Simon Hooper does decide wrongly to, oh, he's only young, let give him a chance. What if 5 minutes later he goes and scores the equaliser and then goes and scores the winner? What do they say then? Just, oh, well, great decision by the referee. We would be absolutely raging. And secondly, by the same ticket, a couple of minutes in that same sort of period of the game, Babis also got booked for a tussle with Harry Maguire. Babis is younger than Shay Lacey. Do we stand? Is anyone saying, why did Babis? Oh, come on, ref, he's only 18. Why did you have to book Babis for it?
Rules
So
is rules.
ridiculous. The boy is completely stupid. I'm sure he'll learn, but the sympathy is completely
Yeah.
ridiculous because
It was
it's a game.
actually quite embarrassing. You're quite right. And let's name and shame here. We're talking Dion Dublin and Phil Jones. Yeah, both saying the same thing. And it's, the letter of the law. Well, it's does it makes it sound like the letter of the law is a bad thing. I know what they're actually saying here. Can the referee instigate some notion of common sense, but there
It
is
would
no common sense. There's no, I
well,
mean, this is an absolute. There's no ambiguity here. It's absolute.
it was AFC Hoops, so you
But
know.
also, if Shay Lacey had done that in an under-18 game, no one would be applauding him off and going, "Oh, don't worry about it. He's young." They'd have been giving him a bollocking and saying, "You've been stupid.
Well,
You'll
absolutely. I mean,
get shot next week. You've
this is
let
the
your
point.
team
All right,
down."
he's young for a first team professional. But he, let's suppose in, I don't know, for the sake of argument, he's been at Man U for 4 years. I don't know, but even if he's gone through the ranks, that means he would have still played hundreds of games with, incidentally, the same laws. There's no difference in an under-18s game compared to a first team games in the notion of the laws of the game. They're all the same. So if he doesn't know what it is he's doing, or hasn't realized. I mean, his beef was mostly what was why did I why should I get booked for that? It's which is a kind of a clearly a sort of teenager at Manchester United looks shocked that
Yeah.
a referee should
I
have
don't
the
know.
notion, the gall to send him off.
Well, the game is over, and we got ourselves in the hat, and the camera kept on panning up to Alex Ferguson in the stands, who was looking very, very sad and looking like he was having a very difficult poo, but which was nice. But so the
Oh,
Darren
I
Fletcher
think he
experiment
was.
is over.
Yeah. I think, isn't it? There's something like about 40 years since Manchester United. Do you know what? I don't care about what Manchester United have done. I'm sick of reading about it. It was us that won, not them that, well,
I
yes, they
did care because
lost.
that was the first time we'd beaten them in six attempts in the FA Cup, and I'm
Although
absolutely thrilled.
even then, the commentator said that Man U have won
Yeah.
every FA Cup match against us.
Well, they haven't. They drew one.
Provably wrong.
Actually, technically, they drew two of them.
Yeah.
Well, there's that, but I'm well the final itself in
And the
83,
semi-final.
and yeah, the semi-final, yes, you could say that, but the final itself, they didn't win. All right, the replay they did, but not the final itself,
No,
unless they
well,
count that as a as one game. But no,
yeah,
it's oh, it
okay.
was. I mean, I'd like to say the post-mortem from the rest of the press was pitiful, but it's. And it actually kind of took us back about sort of 6 7 years to when we were first a Premier League side. And the number of things I'm reading about, it's a shock. Beating Manchester United is not a shock anymore. Someone's pointed out that
No.
it's was it 7 wins in 9 over them. Last 5 visits to Old Trafford, we've scored at least twice.
We've won 4 out of the last 5 visits, I believe. Yeah.
Yes, I mean
I'm
it's.
annoyed when we lose to them. If we lose to them, I'm disappointed. It's not
Yeah.
like it doesn't feel like a
But
gift, does it?
okay. Anyway, so the we were in the hat, but the excitement of us being in the hat was very much short-lived when we came out first and were drawn away to Liverpool.
Well, I actually hoped it was more. Well, I thought it was actually going to be drawn to Barnsley, actually, because another nice little 6-0, and Gomez actually knowing worth what. I mean, let's face it, he likes the Nets at Oakwell, doesn't he?
That's true, but it's a very underwhelming draw again, particularly when you see who other teams have got in the hat. Man City again drawing like a lower league opposition. Morecambe got a home draw again. Not Morecambe.
Are you about to offload a conspiracy theory here, Adrian?
Macclesfield getting a draw. They got Brentford. Well, I'm not suggesting that they were warming the balls out. I would never do that. But
No, because
is
our
that
lawyers
what you
can't
said a bit of
afford
an
to
unfortunate
defend you
pun?
there.
We've had a bit of an unfortunate run with the FA Cup draws, let's say that. I don't think there's a
Yeah.
conspiracy there. It's just
It's not, it's
unfortunate.
just unfortunate. It's just annoying when you see that Man City always get non-league or lower league opposition, and
Can I just
it's
point out
just
that there is one draw which historically is mildly interesting? It's Grimsby are playing Wolves, and that particular fixture, I'm going to go back a long way here, in 1939, drew the largest ever crowd at Old Trafford.
Yeah.
There
Well,
was a
there you
cup
go.
semi-final which Wolves won 5-0.
Yeah.
That's very, very mildly interesting,
Yeah.
Alan.
Anyway, so anyway, we will be away to Liverpool in the next round, and nothing says like Valentine's weekend like a trip to Liverpool in the FA Cup. Anyway,
Grace.
you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. And speaking of Valentine's, Al, we're brought to you in association with Flowers Unlimited.
We are, and they should really be cleaning up on Valentine's Day. Actually, that's a cynical way of putting it. The point is that if you have a loved one that would benefit from maybe, I don't know, a bottle of poo, some chockies, some flowers. Yes, Valentine's Day is coming up, so head over to Flowers Unlimited, floral sponsors, I think they call themselves, floral sponsors of the Albion. 175 to 177 Portland Road, Hove, or go to flowersunlimitedbrighton.co.uk. Yes, and then if you tell them in your own sweet way that you're an Albion season ticket holder, you can get 20% off whatever they dare to charge you. But make sure you do tell them that, otherwise, you're not going to get it. So, yeah, Flowers Unlimited. And a thanks, as ever, to Dave Costa for being a wonderful supporter of both the Albion Roar and Radio Reverb.
I'm Dean Gallagher of Brighton Hove and District Samaritans. Many of us go to football without a care in the world, as an escape from our everyday lives. However, many of us carry our burdens with us into the game and beyond. If you feel you need to speak with someone, call a friend. Or if you see a friend in trouble, please do reach out. Being truly listened to can make such a difference. You can call the Samaritans on 116 123 or see us on a home match day. Let's kick off the conversation.
Okay, and before we move on, Al, we both got the sad news today that one of our good friends has sadly passed away, and I know that you've had a lot of dealings with him. I mean, I've got to know him very well over the
Okay,
years as well.
so what we're talking about here is what AD is talking about here is a fellow called Doug Clark. Now, I've got to rewind here and give some context to this. One, he's a lifelong Albion fan, and he passed away after a short illness today. When I say today, 14th of January. If you rewind to, let me see, 23, 24 years ago, something was set up. I think there was a meeting in Ian Hart's front room between some fans because the club was hemorrhaging money, mostly legal fees, trying to get the Falmer Stadium plans up and running. And it was costing the club a fortune. And it meant that on field, the team was suffering. I mean, for those who are enjoying the high life now, us three and maybe another 6,000-7,000 others did have to watch some turgid stuff and got quite frustrated, but without really appreciating and acknowledging the fact that we were always going to be up against it financially compared to other clubs. The fact that we actually made it into the championship and in fact spent 3 years in the championship while with Dean is actually an astonishing feat. But what it did, what happened was that a group of fans got together and said, okay, well, if we can get 2,500 fans to chuck in a few quid, we can get this amount of money. It can help Dick or whoever the manager was, because let's face it, it was revolving doors of managers in those days, to acquire some players. It wouldn't, might not have necessarily been transfer fees, but it could have helped with salaries and things like that. And they decided between them that 40 quid per person was a reasonable amount to throw in there. And if you can get 2,500 people doing that, then you've got 100 grand in the kitty. Bless him, Ian Hart credits me for thinking of this, but I've got to say, Ian and anyone else, I wasn't there at that meeting. It wasn't my idea, but there was a fellow called Doug Clark, our good friend who passed away today. He was at that meeting, and when I heard about it, I thought it was just such a great idea, and let's kick on with it. So I got to know Doug very well. One for him being a massive Albion fan and running this 40 Notes fund. And we managed to acquire some players along the way. I think probably, well, certainly Dave Besson, we got Ben Roberts, who ended up coming back as a goalkeeping coach and turned David Stockdale from the dropsy to the hero that he became. And Tony Rougier. Now, if you don't know who he is, then probably not worth looking him up really.
Lala Rougier.
Yes, that'll be him. But the other thing is that Doug used to work for The Who back in the 70s and 80s, and he was actually Roger Daltrey's personal assistant. And there's an in-joke amongst The Who that Daltrey, being the health fiend that he was, always wanted to his personal assistant to make him a cup of tea. So Doug got himself a T-shirt, Cup of Tea Doug, which was Roger Daltrey's, now Sir Roger Daltrey's, mantra. So he was always able to give this utterly manic Who fan all these various wonderful stories of times where he was Roger Daltrey's PA. For a time, he probably had the worst job in the world. He was Keith Moon's PA. He lived out in the States for a while Keith Moon was there. He initially started working at Track Records and was the road manager for a band called Golden Earring when they were touring in the early 70s. He has lived that kind of the administrative side of the rock and roll. But so he always had many stories. And we're not talking the Ralph Brown character in Wayne's World 2. Yeah. He only ever had one story. Del Preston, I think that character was.
Yeah.
But the point is that so on two levels. One, the fact that we felt that we were doing something right for the Albion. And two, this was a fellow who could regale so many wonderful sort of rock and roll stories. For me, this is a really, really sad day. I'd heard of his illness earlier this week. His son, Tom, said he might not last January. Well, in the end, he didn't even last the week. Yeah. This is, for me, and for those that knew him, a very, very sad loss. And I am absolutely personally gutted along this one. And I'd only heard this about an hour or so before we started recording. So if my voice does choke up, I hope you'll understand.
I echo those sentiments. I mean, Doug's just anyone who met him, he was just a wonderful, wonderful guy, and it was just a top man, and like it would be greatly missed. And obviously, our thoughts go to Tom and Diane, and anyone who knew Doug. Yeah. Okay, let's moving swiftly on. We've appointed a high performance. I still don't know what this actually means. It just seems
it's a new role, apparently. I think it's more of a sort of psychological role. Somewhere down the line, someone who's this is actually Jason Ato's appointment. Somewhere down the line, perhaps it might have been one of those things that we can get to see, but we don't necessarily know why, is when we see certain performances of players on the pitch. You think, well, is there a psychological problem from stopping them from doing this, this, and this? And is it down to decision-making? Is it something to do with things outside of football that are actually being brought? It's like, you know, bringing your home problems into work, that kind of thing. We don't know. I mean, that's a sort of speculation, but my point is that if there's someone who can mentally help or help with the mental awareness of those players, I think that's kind of, it sounds like this is the job that he's been brought in to do. Sort of, if you're going to be an elite athlete, in this instance in football, this is the kind of thing that this guy can hopefully help with.
I think potentially,
go on, Vicky.
I think you might be being a little bit too almost forensic with that. It sort of reads to me more like it's something a little bit more strategic, in that this is someone that will draw those, rather than being the man that tells the players how to think and how to win. But it's probably more to me about drawing all of those elements together. All of those other elements, not just psychological, but everything else that puts performance in. You know, if you think of someone like Dave Brailsford with the cycling, you know, it was all about the old marginal gain stuff. And he was encouraging them across the organisation to look at everything, wasn't it? It wasn't just about eat the right food or, you know,
like use the same pillow, wasn't it, every night?
Yeah, but it was in his role, it was about, you know, he was a sort of performance specialist, wasn't he? And in his role, it was kind of around just pulling all of those strands together. So is the technology right? Is the are the rest periods right? Are the pillows right? Is there 1% we can gain here from what they're eating, you know, the diet and things like that? And have we got the right psychologists in place, and are we treating the individuals in the way that, you know, tailored to their individual needs as human beings? So potentially it's I know there's some of that falls down to the director of football, but I think, or the sporting director, whatever we have at the Albion, I lose track.
That's the point. I think that Jason Ato probably realises that either he doesn't have time or he's deficient in that, and therefore has brought this fella in. Mm. So, like I say, I think it sounds like it's his appointment.
I think that if it is a bit more, because I did see some critical comments this week around this, because, oh, well, it's like when Southampton brought in Clive Woodward, and I'm not sure it is. One, because I don't think that Southampton era as a club were they weren't particularly well run anyway, and that did strike me as being very much on a whim because Clive Woodward had just come out of the England rugby setup, and at that stage he had quite a good reputation, and so they kind of seized the moment. Oh, let's get him in. I don't, and he probably ended up being a bit of a David Brent to some of the players. But I think this is a slightly different thing. At the end of the day, if you can talk to people, you can understand what their needs are as individual human beings, then I think it doesn't matter what your background is. It's how you get into their heads.
I mean, from the piece on the official website, it says during his time in New Zealand rugby, Mike served as head of high performance player development manager, and high performance sports science manager, working across the national pathway and contributing to one of the most consistently successful programs in global sport.
Do you know what? You're making it sound like Graham Potter here. Albeit with not necessarily the tactical nous. And as much as people will criticise Graham Potter, I think that the fella does have a lot of tactical nous. So I will not hear that sort of, well, Potter did this. Actually, he was a bloody good
I
manager.
did, I've got to say, when I hear the words high performance, there is a quizzical eyebrow, and a certain former presenter springs to mind.
I mean, let's say that this is stuff that, frankly, is outside our ken here, isn't it? I mean, unless you actually work within that specific field, we can say, well, but the point is anyone who criticizes it is saying, well, what's it going to bring? Well, that's a kind of a question born of ignorance. If you're not actually involved in sports administration or sports coaching or mental coach or anything like that, you're not necessarily really in a position. I'm kind of speculating, and I think that probably Vicky's probably closer to the mark than I am. But, the club kind of knows what it's doing. It doesn't always get it right, but it knows what it's doing. And if this is something that just because we don't understand it, doesn't mean to say it's a bad thing. So those who want to criticise, well,
but
go and
you
be a
know
sports
what?
psychologist yourself and then let us know.
You know what? It's percentage gains, isn't it? I mean, Liverpool brought in a throwing coach to get it. Arsenal got brought in a set piece coach to get all this sort of stuff. And it's like,
People, I think in football especially, can be very, very backward looking and sort of, well, this is how we've always done it, and this is what we're. And actually, sometimes all of us, in whatever our job is, we need to reflect and we need to sit there and look. Gosh, I should be on Jake Humphrey's podcast here, shouldn't I? We need to look
At
back
least you remembered his name,
and
like me.
think, does that work? Even if it does work, could it work better? Is there any other, another way of doing it? And I do remember a very wise old a trainer I once had at work, and his phrase was, "If you always do what you've always done, you'll always get what you've always got." And it's kind of stuck with me a bit. I'm definitely going on that
You are.
podcast because being open to things. If it doesn't work, there's nothing lost by it. But if you keep doing the same old things, you'll get the same old results, won't you? So.
You will. I mean, actually, along those lines, I don't know if you've listened to the Albion podcast this week with their interview of Martin Tyler. That was kind of more of an eye-opener. And actually, there's aspects of kind of old school football that they were talking about. I mean, I think they all embrace the changes and probably realize that while football is different, it's usually also better. But there's certain aspects of it you think, well, everything's cyclical. What's going to happen next? And I think that what there was, this is an interesting point, and I don't necessarily disagree with it. What aspect of on-field football has disappeared that you would like to see back? And it's not about liking to see it back, but you think eventually will happen. Now that we've got the long throws coming back in, how long will it be before each team now has two centre forwards?
Get it launched. That's what it is. Get it launched. But
Get it in the blender.
but I mean, God, do you remember how we were both interviewed by Jake Humphrey once, and it was
Yeah, but that
quite a
was.
nauseating.
Well, no, it's not that so much. I hurt my neck because he's about 6'5".
That's true. That's true. Okay, well, we're talking about the broadcasters. This is it's a return to league action this week, and it's our occasional reminder to the broadcasters that football is not a TV show, as we've been given the graveyard shift as Bournemouth visit the Amex on
And
Monday.
also
I hate Monday night football. I hate it.
that Bournemouth at home is not a derby.
It's not a derby. There's 37 teams that are actually closer to Brighton than Bournemouth.
Is that a stat I gave you one time, isn't it?
No, but we have mentioned it on the show several times
Yeah, because
when the
everyone in
broadcasters
London is.
do they keep coming up with the fact that it's a South Coast derby, which it really isn't.
Does that include some French clubs?
It should do.
Actually, I haven't looked at it that way, but yes, it probably does actually. Because I mean, Bournemouth, what is, I'm in Worthing, but from Brighton, yeah, it's still 90 miles. And I could tell you that Brighton to France is about 65. So, yes, it would include Dieppe. It would
Cayenne.
possibly, might even include Le Havre, you
Yeah,
know.
it was actually, that is one of my favorite Albion chants of all time.
It was Hull.
I think it was at Burnley, but it
No,
was
it was Hull. Well, you're so far south, you're practically French.
no, we're Brighton over Albion, we're practically French, is what it was, this whole
I thought it was Hull singing it to us.
no, it was a riposte
All right.
to them, but
Yeah,
yeah.
no. Bournemouth, you love them, don't you, Vic?
Oh, well, I mean, they're not quite so offensive as I haven't been on a good run of form. I think they're kind of finding out this season a little bit what it's like to be us, isn't it? Because they had that really good, well, they had a good run and then they lost all their players, or not, they lost a lot of their key players. They've just lost Semenyo as well. But, you
Who's their
know,
best player?
there's profit next season, I'm sure. They do seem to have a real knack that we don't of finding strikers, though. That's the annoying thing. Well, you know, there's loads of annoying things about Bournemouth. What am I saying? But one of them is
On,
that
Vicky, come on.
naughty club. One of them is that they have an annoying ability to find strikers, and they always have done, haven't they? You think back to,
Ted McDougall.
well, that's slightly, yeah, that's before even my time. But I think. You've had loads of them over the years, haven't you? And they sort of seem to sell them
Yes.
on for profit. And but it, you know, the they found find Semenyo. They signed Semenyo from Bristol City for a reasonable amount of money at the time. He turned out really well.
They're raving about him, and I just find him a dirty thug.
I'm surprised he's fitted in so well as he has at Manchester City, because I thought that Pep would immediately coach all the joy out of him, but he seems to have started quite well. But the lad they've got, Kroupi, the 18, 19-year-old they signed from the French second division last season. Now, he was very highly rated, but, you know, they seem to have picked him up. And I'm pretty sure they're probably playing some rather hefty wages at Bournemouth, because they've picked up a number of players that bigger clubs have been looking at, like Housen last season, who
Right.
went from Juventus to Bournemouth, which, you know, a few years ago would have been unthinkable. But
To Juventus to Bournemouth to Real Madrid. That's a career
well,
path.
I'll say, once upon a time that would have been, well, your career's crashed, mate. Is this what you're just picking up the last of your wages? Whereas nowadays Bournemouth can easily outbid AC Milan for a player. I
Yeah,
mean, did
exactly.
Bournemouth really get that many
Yeah.
good strikers? I mean, Brentford, they definitely do, but particularly of late. But I mean, well, Jermaine Defoe was on loan. I can't really think of any others.
Danny Ings was from Bournemouth. I think Charlie Austin had a
Danny
spell.
Ings was at. I suppose no, he was from. He
Was
was from
signed
there.
for Bournemouth, but Bob Burnley, I think, probably when Eddie Howe went there.
AD, when Vicky is in that mood of actually just tearing her hair out over the likes of Bournemouth, just accept the fact that she knows who her targets are.
I might be wrong, but I think they have picked up. Yeah, similar to Brentford, actually. You know, to be fair to them, Brentford have also developed that knack. We seem to have found a stack of good midfielders over the years. And before that, we only ever developed central defenders from the youth team, didn't we? But the other, those two in particular seem to really know how to find strikers. That, or maybe they just have they know exactly what they're looking for with their system, their style of play. You know, Bournemouth are a very attacking side. That's the thing. I think they have to be, because historically they haven't been quite so good on defence. Whether that's when Howe was there. And it's kind of shown up a little bit this season under Iraola, hasn't it? For all the hype about him at the start of the season, they've had a bad run, and that's mostly down to their defence, because they can still score goals and they break very quickly. So that's what we've got to look out for.
Yeah, and the game last season was probably one of the games of the season, actually. It was really, really end-to-end exciting stuff.
Is that
And we
did we
won.
win?
We did win, yeah.
Right. Well,
Last minute winner.
I don't care
Always
about
good.
the don't care about the rest of it.
We'll have to talk about that next week, because that is all we have time for this week. So thank you, of course, to Vicky Rees. Thank you to Alan Wares. I've been AD Packham. This has been the Albion Roar on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast, and in association with Flowers Unlimited. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you all again next week. Cheers. Bye.
Oh, yeah. up my best clubber. The nights are night, I'm going for nobber. Vauxhall Beavers covered in rust, but you can't poke a bird on a 29 bus.
1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Beer and sex and chips and gravy, it's all the Mike Ladd wants. Beer and sex and chips and gravy, and a tasty return pub. Get up off the floor, finish your chips, we're going for some tomorrow. Pull the bin down the boxing grid. Game of darts and a lot of beer. I said, can you hold your liquor, love? She said,
yes, I can. Always
back
the ears.
1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Beer and sex and chips and gravy. It's all the Macland wants. Beer and sex and chips and gravy. And a tasty bitter pub. I've told you once before. Get up off the floor. Finish your chips. We're going for some tomorrow. They're happy when you're abusing them. Toilets don't follow you around when you're finished using them.
1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.